said Camilla through gritted teeth. Hitherea gave this due consideration. "I'd rather not," she said. Gideon saw, as Camilla could not, the tentacle of bone that wound silently upward from the mess behind the cavalier, tipped with a vicious point the length of a duelist's dagger. Even if she'd had a pristine knee and no necro to haul, Gideon was too far away to save her. The barb drew back like a poised stinger, and Gideon yelled, "Come!" Perhaps it was the yell. Perhaps it was Camilla's extraordinary instincts. The sixth cav twisted sideways, and the hook that should have punched through her spine drove into the meat of her shoulder instead. Her eyes went wide with shock, and the knife fell from her half-flayed hand. Kithareya took the opportunity to shove her contemptuously in the chest, and Camilla toppled backward onto the ground, the sharpened bone still buried in her flesh. Kithareya took up her rapier. In a panic, Gideon began trying to kick her futile way through a jungle of yellow bone, but putting her weight on her bad leg made her stagger and almost drop. Camilla was struggling herself free of the bone skewer, but another tendril had snaked up across her thighs, trapping her against the floor. The lictor stood above her with her green sword gleaming in the light. "You can't hurt me," said Kithareya, almost despairingly. "Nothing can hurt me any more, cavalier." The sword glittered. Gideon thrashed through a mesh of bones that her adept could have parted mid-yawn. As the lictor drew back her arm for a clean thrust into Camilla's heart, 4 inches of bloodied steel emerged from her belly. Camilla stared up at her as though trying to work out why everything hadn't gone black. A red stain was spreading across the thin bedsheet. The lictor's face didn't change, but she turned her head slightly. A pale head was now nearly pillowed on her shoulder, peeking over as though to make sure the sword had hit home. Colourless, fair hair spilled over Kithareya's collarbone like a waterfall. The figure behind her smiled. "Spoke too soon, old news," said Ianthe. "Oh," said Kithareya. "Oh my, a baby lictor." The construct was stuck fast in the trap that Harrowhark had laid for it, and behind them, Gideon could hear its central bulk straining to see what had pained its mistress, like a great skull swiveling in its web. It was held fast, but it still had range, and it lifted its spines to even the fight. Ianthe ran her free hand over the blood trickling down Kithareya's hip. She flicked hot drops over her shoulder, where they hung in the air, sizzling. They ran together like quicksilver, spread out, widened and flattened into a shimmering, transparent pink sheet. Ianthe narrowed her watercolor eyes and pointed her free hand upward. The sheet tightened, a wide, watery disk of blood separating the two lictors from the construct. A barbed bone stinger drove straight at Ianthe's head, hit the shimmering disk, and dissolved. Gideon body-checked her way clear, hauling herself to a corner of the room as far away from the construct as possible. She wasn't thrilled about approaching the embracing lictors, but if she played her cards right, she could still get Harrowhark and Camilla out of here. Another stinger, then another, hurtled into the blood disk and evaporated. Despite herself, she turned to watch. The construct stiffened a dozen of its tendrils, 2 dozen, aiming them like javelins at Ianthe's tiny form, and Gideon remembered Isaac Tetteris impaled on 50 spines at once. As Gideon passed it, Ianthe's blood pool spun even wider, an aegis, a shield. The construct struck from its stuck position, with its whole gathered array of swift spears, enough of them to reduce Ianthe to a double handful of chopped meat. Every single one went up in a cloud of bad-smelling steam. The remaining stumps drew back in confusion. The construct swayed, and bones dropped free from its superstructure here and there, rattling down to join the general debris around its trapped legs. there was suddenly a lot more space. Injured as well as pinned, the construct seemed to be drawing back on itself, pulling in its remaining limbs as if trying to keep them away from Ianthe. Gideon snuck past the foot of the dais in time to see Kithareia smile. "I've always wanted a little sister," she said. She walked away from Ianthe's sword with a bad liquid sound. Camilla was still wriggling in place, trying to tug herself free of the spike in her shoulder, and Kithareia stepped on her, treading on her collarbone as thoughtlessly as on a ridge in the carpet. Once she was a couple of paces clear, she turned and fell into a beautiful, fluid-ready stance. She kept running her fingers over the blood at her abdomen, apparently amazed by her capacity to bleed. Gideon wished she was less interested and more dying, but you had to take victories where you could get them. The other, much newer lictor, raised Nibirius's sword, kicking bones away for footing. "I've tried the sister thing already," said Ianthe, circling around to one side, "and I wasn't any good at it."
"But I have so much to teach you," said Kithareia. They both charged.
Once upon a time, it would have been pretty cool to watch the perfect showman sword of the Third House compete against an ancient and undiluted warrior of the Seventh. But Gideon was crouching down next to Camilla and trying to gauge whether or not her own kneecap was trying to slide off somewhere weird. She had laid down the unconscious Herohark behind a pillar on a pile of the softest-looking bones, with her long sword for company, and was wishing fervently that her necromancer was awake. She grabbed Camilla's shoulder in one hand and the slick bone spur in the other, said, "Sorry," and pulled. Camilla screamed. Gideon flung the bloodied spike away, got her arms under Camilla's armpits, and pulled. Camilla bit her tongue so hard that blood squirted out her mouth, but Gideon heartlessly dragged her away from the ongoing brawl and into cover next to Harrowhark. Gideon started to look her over to see if her intestines were fountaining out or something, but Camilla grabbed her sleeve. Gideon looked down into her solemn, obstinate face, and Camilla said,
"He say anything?"
Gideon wavered.
"He said to tell you he loved you," she said.
"What? No, he didn't."
"Okay, no, sorry. He said you knew what to do?"
"I do," said Camilla with grim satisfaction, and laid herself back down among the bones. Gideon looked back at the fight. It was not like watching Ianthe and Silas go at it. Ianthe had wiped the floor with Silas while simultaneously skirmishing with Nibirius's soul. A fight between two lictors was a sword fight on a scale beyond mortal. They moved almost faster than the eye could see, each clash of their swords sending great shockwaves of ash and smoke and aerosolized bone billowing outward. The spacious atrium of Canaan House had been built to last, but not through this. The floor splintered and bowed dangerously wherever the construct had dragged itself. The tentacles dug through the floorboards, burrowed out again in showers of rotten timber and bone, and as Ianthe and Kithareia fought, parts of the room exploded at their passing, ancient beams and pillars giving up with screams of falling rock and wood. Brackish water from the fountain had spattered the floor and trickled into the cracks. Cracks! Shit! The floor was cracking. Everything was cracking. Huge fissures separated Gideon from the doors. Ianthe, a lock of her colourless hair in her mouth, chewing furiously, raised her hand, and a gushing column of black arterial blood burst upward, lifting Kithareia 20 feet into the air and dropping her. She hit the ground awkwardly, and as she staggered to her feet again, Ianthe stepped up, hand sparking and flickering with harsh white light, and hit her with a tremendous right hook. The punch would have spun Marshal Crux's scabrous, plate-clad bulk around 3 times like a top and left him on the floor seeing little skeletal birdies. It knocked Kithareia clean through the wall. The wall was already feeling pretty sorry for itself,
and at this last insult it gave up entirely and collapsed, with a terrific rumble and crash of rock and brick and bursting glass, slumping outward onto the garden terrace. Daylight flooded through, and the smell of hot concrete and wood mould filled the air. The potholed floor groaned as if threatening to follow suit. Camilla, who had guts of steel and the pain tolerance of a brick, wobbled to stand. Gideon wove her arm beneath Camilla's sword arm before the Sixth Cavalier could protest, retrieved the birdbone bundle of her necromancer, and staggered outside as fast as this crippled procession could manage. There was simply nowhere else to go. The salt wind from the sea blew hot and hard through holes in the glass that sheltered the expanse where mouldering plants continued to dry out on their great trellises. Insensitive to the situation, Dominicus shone down on them, cradled in the unreal cerulean of the first sky. Gideon laid Herohark down in the shadow of a broken-ass wall that seemed as though it wouldn't crumple down and squash her yet. Camilla slumped next to her, swords crossed over her knees. At least this place had significantly fewer bones. Ianthe strode down a low flight of stairs, sword in hand, hair rippling white-yellow in the breeze. Dead leaves and plant matter drifted down around her, disturbed by the crumbling wall. Kithareia was picking herself up off the flagstones where she'd been hurled, and as Ianthe lunged at her again, it was obvious she was on the defensive. She was not as quick as Ianthe. She was not as reactive. She would still have speared Gideon through in the first 10 seconds of a fair fight, but against another lictor, things seemed to be going wrong. Ianthe grew more vicious with each hit. As Kithareia's blood flew into the air, she was freezing it in place, manipulating it, stitching long red lines through the space around and between them. Every time Kithareia got hurt, and she was getting hurt now, bleeding like a normal person, with none of her earlier invulnerability, the web of blood grew in size and complexity, until it looked like she was dueling in a cage of taut red string. Nor was that the worst of it. As Gideon watched, somewhere between horror and fascination, the earlier wounds, the ones Palamedes had inflicted when he blew up the sick room, began to reopen. Strips of skin along the lictor's arms blackened and curled. A big, messy gouge split down her thigh, independent of Ianthe's blade. Even the curly hair started to sizzle and crisp back up. "What the hell?" objected Gideon, more to relieve her feelings than in hope of an answer. "She hadn't healed," said Camilla, weakly from beside her. Gideon glanced around. The other Cav had dragged herself up into a sitting position against the wall, and was watching the fight with grim, professional eyes. Of course, cavaliers from houses with more than one living necromancer probably saw Necromancer's Duel all the time. "She'd just skinned over the damage. A surface fix. Hides the cracks. To really heal, she needs thalagy, life force, and she hasn't got any to spare." "Oh, yeah," said Gideon. "Sextus gave her turbo cancer." Camilla nodded with enormous personal satisfaction. "Well," she said, "that'll do it." Ianthe's magic was as efficient and lean as Nibirius's swordsmanship, neat and contemptuous, clean and too perfect, not a beat missed or a second's hesitation. Kithareia stumbled away from her onslaught, and Ianthe closed the trap. The cage of blood suddenly contracted, tightened, clinging to the older lictor like a net. Kithareia stood tangled in it, not even bothering to try to fight free, eyes closed to slits. Her hair was scorched almost down to stubble. She was struggling to breathe. Her shrapnel wounds were gaping red and fresh, and her knees were buckling. The smell of blood and leaves was overpowering. Ianthe stood before her, panting now herself. She kept shaking her head as though to clear it, kept rubbing her temples fretfully. but she was gleaming and triumphant, sweating, smug. Tired, she said. Kithareya opened her eyes and coughed. Not particularly, she said, but you're exhausted. The filmy red net dissolved to nothing. It didn't even fall away from her. It seemed almost to be absorbed back through her skin. She straightened up, stepped forward, and grabbed Ianthe's throat in one fine-boned, delicate hand. Ianthe's eyes bulged, and her hands flew up to clutch at the other woman's wrist. Just like a child, all your best moves first, said Kithareya. Ianthe squirmed. A thread of blood coiled in the air around her, uselessly, and then spattered to the ground. The ancient lictor said, You aren't completed, are you? I can feel him pushing. He's not happy. Mine went willingly, and it hurt for centuries. If I'm old news, you're fresh meat. She tightened her grip on Ianthe's throat, and the dreadful, bone-deep suction of siphoning sent an icy ripple throughout the sheltered terrace. The trees and trellises shook. This was soul-siphoning as Gideon had never felt it before. Colourless at the best of times, Ianthe was now as blank and tintless as a sheet. Her eyes rolled back and forth in her head, and then there was no eye to roll. She jerked and squealed, pupils gone, irises gone, as though Kithareya had somehow had the ability to suck them out of her skull. No! Cried Ianthe. No! 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 The great wound in Kithareya's thigh was starting to weave itself back up. So too were the burn marks all over her arms and her neck. Her charred hair was growing back in, rippling out in pale brown waves from her skull, and she sighed with pleasure as she shook her head. Okay, said Camilla in carefully neutral tones. Now she's healing. The thigh wound closed up, leaving the skin smooth as alabaster. Kithareya dropped Ianthe dismissively to the ground in a crumpled-up heap. Now, little sister, she told the grey-lipped third princess, don't think this means I'm not impressed. You did become a lictor, and so you'll get to live for a while. But I don't need your arms and your legs, so... She rested one delicate foot on Ianthe's wrist, and Gideon rose to her feet. The sharp shank of bone extended from her knuckles, a long butcher's blade with a wicked heft. Kithareya sliced down. Bright red blood sprayed in the sunshine as Ianthe's right arm came off just above the elbow. Ianthe, too weak even to scream, made a keening sound. By this point, Gideon had already lurched forward two steps and regretted it. Her kneecap was absolutely not where it should have been. She tottered to the side, letting her sword drop one-handed, pressing her other over the knee and cursing the day she had been born with kneecaps. Kithareya was shifting to the other side, the other limb, judging the distance with her bloody Duck! Called Camilla. Camilla had somehow propped herself on the arm with the mangled shoulder wound, which was in no condition for propping. Her good arm was up behind her head, holding the blade of her knife. Gideon ducked. The knife whistled over the top of Gideon's head in a flashing blur and buried itself in Kithareya's upper back. This time Kithareya screamed. She went stumbling away from Ianthe's prone form, and Gideon saw what Camilla had been aiming at. A lump, a delicate swollen mass right next to Kithareya's shoulder blade. It bulged out only slightly, but once you saw it, it was impossible to unsee, especially with a long knife buried squarely in its centre. Kithareya fumbled one hand over her shoulder, bone appendage drifting into dust, groping for the knife. She found it. She pulled it out, drawing a spurt of appalling black and yellow liquid from the wound. The lictor turned her head and coughed miserably into the crook of her elbow. Then she looked at the knife, wondering at it. She turned her head to look at Camilla and Harrow and Gideon. She sighed pensively and ran one hand through her curls again. "Oh, no," she said. "Heroics." She dropped the knife, fell gracefully to one knee beside Ianthe, and lifted a limp arm, the one that was still connected to her body, in a cruel mockery of hand-holding. Gideon thought for a bad second she was going to pull the limb clean off, and wondered how far she could throw a longsword. Except, no, her longsword was never going to leave her hands again, thank you. But Kithareya was just siphoning. There was the deep-gut lurch as energy drained from the younger lictor to the older, knitting the gross knife wound back up again. "An inadequate lictor," said Kithareya, as though giving Gideon and Camilla a hot tip on stain removal, "still makes a perfect power source, an everlasting battery." She stood back up and wiped her mouth with the back of her hand. Then she began walking toward Gideon, calm, almost insolent in her lack of aggression. This was somehow much scarier than if she'd stalked forward with a hateful glare and a rill of mad laughter. Gideon planted herself before Camilla and the unconscious body of her adept and held her sword aloft. They were alone in a back area of the courtyard, a little area not yet buried in rubble or tilled up by the titanic fight between two immortal sorcerers. Dead trees bowed overhead. Gideon stood behind the iron fence that had once protected some herbaceous border, as though its bent, bowed spikes would be good for anything other than throwing herself down on as one last fuck-you salute. Camilla was huddled in a corner, now standing upright. That was probably her own last fuck-you salute, but her wounded arm hung uselessly. She had lost a lot of blood. Her face was now pallid olive. "Ninth," said the sixth impatiently. "Get out of here. Take your necromancer. Go!" "Hell no," said Gideon. "It's time for round two." She considered that. "Wait, is this round three now? I keep losing count." Kithareya the First was brushing bloodstains off her makeshift dress, the blood leaching into her fingers as though it obeyed the merest touch of her fingertips. She vaulted daintily into their part of the courtyard and smiled Dulcinea's smile at Gideon, dimpling, bright-eyed, as though they both knew something extra nice that nobody else did. "There's that two-hander," she said admiringly. "Want a closer look?" said Gideon. The lictor arched her free hand languorously behind her back. She slid into position, weighting herself on her back foot, the sword in her hand luminous, tinted green like still water or pearls. "You know you can't do this, Gideon of the Ninth," she said. "You're very brave, a bit like another Gideon I used to know, but you're prettier in the eyes."
"I may be from the Ninth House," said Gideon, "but if you say any more cryptic shit at me, you're going to see how well you can regenerate when you're in 18 pieces."
"Cry mercy," said Kithareya. The dimple was still there. "Please, you don't even know what you are to me. You're not going to die here, Gideon, and if you ask me to let you live, you might not have to die at all. I've spared you before." Something ignited deep in her ribcage.
"Jean-Marie Chateau didn't ask for mercy. Magnus didn't ask for mercy. Or Isaac, or Abigail. I bet you Palamedes never even considered asking for mercy."
"Of course he didn't," said the lictor. "He was too busy detonating." Gideon the Ninth charged. Kithareya went straight for her heart, no foreplay. But this was a Gideon who had trained with a double-handed sword since before she could even hold the damn thing.
This was a Gideon who had lived her entire life behind the hilt of a two-hander. No more playing around with dodging and ducking and moving away. It was her, her sword, and all of the power and strength and speed that Iglamine had been able to realize in her. She met Kithareya's water-smooth thrust to her heart with an upward cut that flung the lictor's rapier's point skyward and ought to have knocked it clean out of her hand. She stopped thinking about the pain in her knee and went back to being the Gideon Nav who never left Dreabur, who fought like it was her only ticket off-world. The lictor danced out and in again, close quarters, trying to slide her sword under and around Gideon's own. Gideon knocked the thing to the ground, the rapier scraping the flagstones with an awful screech. Kithareya retreated prettily, and Gideon smashed her guard and followed through with a huge, perfect overhand cut. It ought to have cleaved the lictor open from the shoulder to the gut. She'd wanted it to, but the edge of her sword sank into Kithareya's collarbone and bounced off like she was trying to cut steel. There was the faintest pink mark on the skin, and then nothing. Her two-hander had failed. Something in Gideon rolled over and gave up. Kithareya moved in for the kill, her sword flashing like a snake, like a whip, as Gideon moved half a second behind where she needed to be. She saved herself a skewered lung by clumsily blocking with the flat of her sword. The lictor's unholy strength made the longsword shudder on impact, and Gideon's forearm shuddered with it. Undeterred, Kithareya went for her numbed arm, sank the tip deep into the soft flesh above the bicep, met the bone, splintered something deep in there. Gideon gave ground, sword held in guard, clawing for distance now. The blade was drooping in her hands, despite every iota of determination coursing through her body. She tried to conjure up some of the old, cruel caution with which Iglamine had so often sent her to the mat, watched Kithareya closely, stepped away from a feint, saw an opening, turned herself to iron and thrust forward, straight to her opponent's heart. Kithareya raised her free hand and caught the blade before it carved through her sternum. She had to step back with the force of the blow, but her frail, worn hand wrapped around the breadth of the blade and held it as easily as Nibirius's shitty trick trident knife had her rapier all those years ago in the training room. Gideon shoved. Her feet slipped for purchase on the ground, her knee screaming. Her arms squirted blood with the effort. Kithareya sighed. "Oh, you were gorgeous," said the lictor. "A thing apart." She batted Gideon's sword away with her hand. Then she advanced. "Step off, bitch," said Herohark, Nona Jesimus, behind her. Kithareya turned to look. The black-robed, black-hooded figure had stumbled forward, step by staggering step, away from the shelter of the tower wall. She was bookended by skeletons, skeletons too huge to have ever lived inside the greasy meat sock of anyone real. Each was 8 feet high with ulna bones like tree trunks and wicked bone spikes spiraling over their arms. "I wish the Ninth House would do something that was more interesting than skeletons," said Kithareya pensively. One of the monstrous constructs flung itself at Kithareya like she was a bomb it was ending its life upon. The second came shambling after it. Kithareya contemptuously dashed away one skeleton's enormous forearm spike. She shattered another with her rapier, and the spike, almost before it had finished crumbling, stretched and pushed itself back into shape. Hero wasn't stinting on the perpetual bone, and if she kept it up, she was going to be a perpetual corpse. Gideon rolled away, seized her sword, and crawled. Her pierced arm left a snail's trail of slippery red behind her. It was only years of training under Iglamine that gave her the guts to wobble herself upright before her adept, blind with blood, blade lent flat on her good shoulder. Two more dead giants were already knitting themselves together. Hera couldn't afford this, she thought dimly. Hero couldn't afford this at all.
You're learning fast, said the lictor, and she sounded honestly delighted. But I'm afraid you've got a long way to go.
Kithareya crooked her fingers toward the massive hole torn in the side of the tower. There was a cry from within, followed by an awful cracking, tearing, breaking sound, when the horrible, many-legged construct exploded through the hole. It was not as great nor as leggy as it had been before. It had torn itself free from Harrow's shackles, and in doing so had left most of itself behind. It was a miserable shadow of its previous bulk. Compared to anything normal, though, it was still a horror of waving stumps and tendrils, all lengthening and thickening, regrowing themselves even as she watched. It had been stuck, and now it was halved, but it could still regenerate. The huge, expressionless face gleamed whitely in the afternoon light, now teetering on a trunk too small for its mask, and broken glass pattered down its sides like drops of water as it crawled out. It sat its broken body on the terrace like a ball of white roots, swaying on two legs, a bitten spider. It wasn't fair. Kithareya had been right all along. There was nothing they could do. Even half-destroyed, the bristling tentacles and lappets were raised 100 strong in the air. It staggered and aimed itself in their direction, and there was nowhere to run. No dodging, no escape. The lictor said, "None of you have learned how to die gracefully. I learned over 10,000 years ago." "I'm not done," said Gideon's half-dead necromancer. Hera closed her hands. The last thing Gideon saw was the debris of her perpetual servants rattling toward them, bouncing through the air and over the flagstones, hardening in a shell over her and Camilla and Harrow as all those tendrils struck them at once. The noise was deafening. Wham! 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 Until it became a single hammer, a metered pounding. Wham! 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 The world vibrated around them. Everything was suddenly very dark. A wavering yellow light flicked on, and Gideon realized that against all odds, Camilla had somehow retained her pocket torch. They were closed in with the bowing iron trellises and the wilting, anciently dead bushes. The sky, the sea, and the rest of the garden were cut off behind a smooth, curved shell of what seemed to be solid, uninterrupted bone, like the hemisphere of a propped-up skull. Harrow swayed upright in the gloom as the beast tried to crack them open like a nut and looked at Camilla and Gideon through a face that was mostly blood. Not even blood sweat, just blood. Beneath her skin, blood vessels had detonated like mines. It was coming through her pores. She'd figured out how to make perpetual bone, half-destroyed a giant dead spider from hell, and now she'd raised a solid wall 6 inches thick and was holding it up with sheer nerve. The reverend daughter of the ninth house smiled, tiny and triumphant. Then she keeled into Gideon's arms. Gideon stumbled, sick with terror, kneeling them both down to the ground as Harrow lay like a broken rag doll. She forgot her sword, forgot everything, as she cradled her used-up adept. She forgot the wrecked ligaments in her sword arm, her messed-up knee, the cups of blood she'd lost, everything but that tiny, smouldering, victorious smile. "Harrow! Come on! I'm here!" she told her, howling to be heard above the thunder of the construct's assault. "Siphon, damn it!" "After what happened to the eighth?" Hera's voice was surprisingly strong, considering she appeared to be all black robes and wounds. "Not ever again." "You can't hold this shit forever, Hera. You couldn't hold this shit 10 minutes ago." "I don't have to hold it forever," said the necromancer. She contemplatively spat out a clot of blood, rolled her tongue around inside her mouth.
Listen, take the sixth, get into a brace position, and I'll break you through the wall. Bones float. It's a long drop to the sea.
Nope!
Harrow ignored her, but all you have to do is survive the fall. We know that the ships have been called. Get off the planet as soon as you can. I'll distract her as long as possible. All you have to do is live.
Harrow, said Gideon, this plan is stupid, and you're stupid. No.
The Reverend Daughter reached up to take a fistful of Gideon's shirt. Her eyes were dark and glassy through the pain and nausea. She smelled like sweat and fear and about 9 tons of bone. She swabbed at her face again with her sleeve and said,
Griddle, you made me a promise. You agreed to go back to the ninth. You agreed to do your duty by the locked tomb.
Don't do this to me.
I owe you your life, said Harrow Hark. I owe you everything.
Harrow let go of her shirt and subsided to the floor. Her paint had all come off. She kept choking and sniffling on the thick rivulets of blood coming out her nose. Gideon tilted the wet, dark head so that her necromancer did not die untimely from drowning in her bloodied mucus, and tried desperately to think of a plan.
Wham!
One of the tentacles battered a crack in the shield. Daylight streamed in from outside. Harrow looked even worse in the light. Camilla said steadily,
Let me out. I can provide the distraction.
Cram it already, Hecht, said Gideon, not looking away from her necromancer, who was painfully serene as even her eyebrows bled.
I'm not getting haunted by Palamedes Sextus's crappy-ass revenant all telling me doctor facts for the rest of my life, just because I let you get disintegrated.
The other plan isn't going to work, said Camilla evenly. If we could hold her off and wait on the shore, yes, but we can't.
Harrow sighed, stretched out on the floor.
Then we hold her off as long as we can, she said.
The crack knitted itself back together with painful, guttering slowness. Harrow snarled from the effort. They were plunged into darkness again, and the sounds from outside stopped, as though the construct was considering its next move. Camilla closed her eyes and relaxed. Her long, dark fringe fell over her face. It was that, Camilla in motion, now Camilla at rest, that made the tiny voice inside Gideon's head say, amazed, We really are going to die. Gideon looked down at her necromancer. She had the heavy-lidded expression of someone who was concentrating in the knowledge that when they stopped concentrating, they would fall abruptly asleep. Harrow had gone unconscious once before. Gideon knew that the second time she let Harrow go under, there would probably not be any awakening. Harrow reached up. Her hand was trembling and tapped Gideon on the cheek.
Nav, she said, have you really forgiven me?
Confirmed. They were all going to eat it.
Of course I have, you bozo.
I don't deserve it.
Maybe not, said Gideon, but that doesn't stop me forgiving you.
Harrow.
Yes?
You know I don't give a damn about the locked tomb, right? You know I only care about you, she said in a broken-hearted rush. She didn't know what she was trying to say, only that she had to say it now. With a bad, juddering noise, a tentacle had started to pound their splintering shelter again.
Wham!
I'm no good at this duty thing. I'm just me. I can't do this without you. And I'm not your real Cavalier Primary. I never could have been.
Wham! Wham! Wham!
The crack reopened at this punishment. The sunlight got in, and fragments of bone dissolved in a shower of grey matter. It held, but Gideon didn't care. The construct wasn't there. The shelter wasn't there. Even Camilla, who had turned away to politely investigate something on the opposite wall, wasn't there. It was just her and Harrow and Harrow's bitter, high-boned, stupid little face. Harrow laughed. It was the first time she had ever heard Harrow really laugh. It was a rather weak and tired sound. "Gideon the Ninth, first flower of my house," she said hoarsely. "You are the greatest cavalier we have ever produced. You are our triumph, the best of all of us. It has been my privilege to be your necromancer." That was enough. Gideon the Ninth stood up so suddenly that she nearly bumped her head on the roof of the bone shield. Her arm complained loudly. She ignored it. She paced back and forth. Harrow watched her with only mild concern, studying the little space they were boxed into. The dead leaves, the cracked flagstones. Camilla. Camilla looked back at her, but she was already moving on. She couldn't do this to Camilla. The powdery grey drifts of bone, the iron spikes of the railings. "Yeah, fuck it," she said. "I'm getting us out of here." "Criddle!" Gideon limped over near the dusty flower beds. Wham! 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 She didn't have much time, but she only had one shot anyway. She struggled out of her black robe and thought about taking off her shirt in one mental blurt of panic, but decided she didn't need to. She peeled her gloves off her wet red palms and rolled up her sleeves for no reason, except that it gave her something to do with her shaking hands. She made her voice as calm as possible. In a way, she was calm. She was the calmest she had ever been in her entire life. It was just her body that was frightened. "Okay," she said. "I understand now. I really, truly, absolutely understand." Harrow Hark had leant back on her elbows and was watching her, black eyes lightless and soft. "Nav," she said, the gentlest she had ever heard Harrow manage, "I can't hold this for much longer." Wham! 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 "I don't know how you're holding it now," said Gideon, and she backed up, looked at what she was backing toward, looked back at her necromancer. She sucked in a wobbly breath. Harrow was looking at her with a classic expression of faint nonagesimus pity, as though Gideon had finally lost her intellectual faculties and might wet herself at any moment. Camilla watched her with an expression that showed nothing at all. Camilla the Sixth was no idiot. She said, "Harrow, I can't keep my promise, because the entire point of me is you. You get that right? That's what cavaliers sign up for. There is no me without you. One flesh, one end." A shade of exhausted suspicion flickered over her necromancer's face. "Nav," she said, "what are you doing? The cruelest thing anyone has ever done to you in your whole entire life, believe me," said Gideon. "You'll know what to do, and if you don't do it, what I'm about to do will be no use to anyone." Gideon turned and squinted, gauged the angle. She judged the distance. It would have been the worst thing in the world to look back, so she didn't. She mentally found herself all of a sudden in front of the doors of Dreaba, 4 years old again and screaming, and all her fear and hate of them went away. Dreaba was empty. There was no Crux. There were no god-awful great aunts. There were no restless corpses, no strangers in coffins, no dead parents. Instead, she was Dreaba. She was Gideon Nav, and Nav was a Niner name. She took the whole putrid, quiet, filth-strewn madness of the place, and she opened her doors to it. Her hands were not shaking any more. Wham! 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 The structure bowed and creaked. Big chunks were falling away now, letting in wide splotches of sunlight. She felt movement behind her,
but she was faster. "For the ninth," said Gideon. And she fell forward, right on the iron spikes.
Act 5, Chapter 37.
"Okay," said Gideon. "Okay, get up."
Harrowhark Nona Jesimus got up.
"Good," said her cavalier. "You can stop screaming any moment now, just an FYI. Now, first, make sure nothing's going to ice Camilla. I meant it about not wanting an afterlife subscription to Palamedes Sextus's top nerd facts."
"Gideon," said Harrow, and again, more incoherently, "Gideon!"
"No time," said Gideon.
A hot wind blew over them both. It whipped Harrow's hair into her face.
"Incoming!"
The shield sighed, shuddered, and finally broke. The ancient lictoral construct surged forward, triumphant in its brainlessness. Harrow saw it for what it was, a spongy breadth of regenerating ash and many lengths of teeth. For all its killing speed before, it now crested before them as though it were travelling through syrup. It shivered in the air, 100 white lances ready.
Gideon said, "Take it down."
And Harrow took it down. It was bafflingly simple. It was nothing more than a raised skeleton, and not one that had been formed with any particular grace. It was half gone already, having torn itself free like an animal from her trap. The head was just a chitinous plate. The trunk was a roll of bone. The remaining tentacles fell like rain, arrested in mid-swing. The bone responded to their call, and together they sailed the thing through the cracked glass panes of the terrace garden to fall, a huge white comet with flailing tails of bone, into the rolling ocean.
"There's my sword," Gideon said. "Pick it up! Pick it up! And stop looking at me, Dick! Don't! Don't you dare look at me!"
Harrow turned her head away from the iron railing and picked up the longsword and cried out. It was far too heavy, far too awkward. Gideon reached her arm out to steady Harrow's sword hand, shifting the other arm around her in a strange embrace. Her fingers wrapped around Harrow's scratchy with calluses. The sheer weight of the thing still stretched the muscles of Harrow's forearms painfully, but Gideon clasped her wrist, and despite the pain, they lifted the sword together.
"Your arms are like fucking noodles," said Gideon disapprovingly. "I'm a necromancer, Nav." "Yeah, well, hope you like lifting weights for the next myriad."
They were cheek to cheek, Gideon's arm and Harrow's arm entwined, holding the sword aloft, letting the steel catch the light. The terrace stretched out before them, glass shards spraying in the wake of the construct, falling as slowly and as lightly as down. Harrow looked back at Gideon, and Gideon's eyes, as they always did, startled her, their deep chromatic amber, the startling hot gold of freshly brewed tea. She winked. Harrow said,
"I cannot do this."
"You already did it," said Gideon. "It's done. You ate me and rebuilt me. We can't go home again."
"I can't bear it."
"Suck it down," said Gideon. "You're already 200 dead daughters and sons of our house. What's one more?"
Before them stood Kithareia the First, though they noticed her only as an afterthought. She stood with her sword down, just watching them, her eyes as wide and as blue as the death of light. The garden narrowed to her, and her bloody green sword. Her lips were parted in a tiny O. She did not even seem particularly troubled, just amazed, as though they were an aurora, a mirage, an unreal trick of the sunshine.
"Now we kick her ass until candy comes out," said Gideon. "Oh, damn! Nona Jesimus, don't cry! We can't fight her if you're crying!"
Harrow said with some difficulty,
"I cannot conceive of a universe without you in it."
"Yes, you can. It's just less great and less hot," said Gideon.
"Fuck you, Nav!"
"Harrowhark," said Gideon the Ninth, "someday you'll die and get buried in the ground, and we can work this out then. For now, I can't say you'll be fine. I can't say we did the right thing. I can't tell you shit. I'm basically a hallucination produced by your brain chemistry while coping with the massive trauma of splicing in my brain chemistry. Even if I wasn't, I don't know Jack Harrow. I never did, except for one thing.
She lifted Harrow's arm with the hilt clutched in it. Her fingers, rough and strong and sure, moved Harrow's other hand into place above the pommel.
I know the sword, she said, and now so do you.
Gideon brought them into position, weight on the forward foot, knee bent a little, light on the right. She tilted the blade so that it was held with the blade pointed high before them, a perfect line. She moved Harrow's head up and corrected her hips. Time sped up, blurred, moved in bright lights before them. Now the old lictor Kithareia, wretchedly old. It seemed impossible that they could have ever taken her for anything else, stood there at the bottom of the stairs. Her radioactive blue eyes were quiet. Her sword was held at the ready. She was smiling with colourless lips.
How do you feel, little sister? She said.
Harrow Hark's mouth said,
ready for round three, and, or round four. I think I lost track.
Their swords met. The noise of metal on metal screamed in that empty garden. Kithareia the First had been Kithareia the First for 10,000 years, and even 10,000 years ago her cavalier had been great. Time had made her more perfect than a mortal cavalier could understand. In a fair fight, they might even have fought to a standstill. It was not a fair fight. As they fought, and fighting was like a dream, like falling asleep, they could see Kithareia was made up of different parts. Her eyes had been taken from somewhere else, two blue spots of someone else's fire. Within her chest, another conflagration burned, and this one was eating her alive. It smoked and smouldered where her lungs ought to have been, bulging dark and malignant. It had swollen to the bursting point inside her body, and most of Kithareia's energy was being expended on holding it still. Harrow could touch what Palamedes had done, nudge it, knock it out of Kithareia's grip.
There, said Gideon in Harrow's ear, her voice softer now.
Thanks, Palamedes.
Sextus was a marvel, admitted Harrow. Too bad you didn't marry him. You're both into old dead chicks.
Gideon!
Focus, Nona Jesimus. You know what to do. Kithareia the First vomited a long stream of black blood. There was no fear in her now. There was only anticipation verging on panicked excitement, like a girl waiting for her birthday party. The weight of Gideon's arms on Harrow's forearms was getting more ephemeral, harder to perceive. The brush of Gideon's cheek was suddenly no more substantial than the remembrance of an old fever. Her voice was in her ear, but it was very far away. Harrow placed the tip of her sword to the right of Kithareia's breastbone. The world was slow and chilly.
One flesh, one end, said Gideon, and it was a murmur now, on the very edge of hearing.
Harrow said, don't leave me.
The land that shall receive thee dying, in the same will I die, and there will I be buried. The Lord do so, and so to me, and add more also, if aught but death part me and thee, said Gideon.
See you on the flip side, sugar lips.
Harrow Hark drove the blade home, straight through the malignant thing in Kithareia's chest. It bubbled and clawed out of her, a well of tumours, a cancer, and she seized up. It ran through her like a flame touched to oil, seething visibly beneath her skin, her veins, her bones. They bulged and buckled, her skin tore, her heart strained, stretched, and, after 10,000 years poor service, gave out. Kithareia the First sighed in no little relief. Then she toppled over, and she died. The sword made a terrific clatter as it dropped to the ground.
The breeze blew Harrow's hair into her mouth as she ran back and strained at the arms of her cavalier, pulled and pulled so that she could take her off the spike and lay her on her back. Then she sat there for a long time. Beside her, Gideon lay smiling a small, tight, ready smile, stretched out beneath a blue and foreign sky.
Epilogue. Harrowhark Nona Jesimus came around in a nest of sterile white. She was lying on a gurney, wrapped up in a crinkly thermal blanket. She turned her head. Next to her, there was a window, and outside the window was the deep velvet blackness of space. Cold stars glimmered in the far distance like diamonds, and they were very beautiful. If it had been possible to die of desolation, she would have died then and there. As it was, all she could do was lie on the bed and observe the smoking wreck of her heart. The lamps had been turned down to an irritatingly soothing glow, bathing the small room in soft, benevolent radiance. They shone down on her gurney, on the white walls, on the painfully clean white tiles of the floor. The brightest light in the room came from a tall reading lamp positioned next to a metal chair in the corner. In the chair sat a man. On the arm of his chair was a tablet, and in his hands was a sheaf of flimsy, which he would occasionally shuffle and take notes on. He was simply dressed. His hair was cropped close to his head, and in the light it shone a nondescript dark brown. The man must have sensed her wakefulness, for he looked up from his flimsy and his tablet at her, and he shuffled them aside to stand. He approached her, and she saw that his sclera were black as space. The irises were dark and leadenly iridescent, a deep rainbow oil slick, ringed with white. The pupils were as glossy black as the sclera. Harrow could never tell precisely how she knew who he was, only that she did. She threw off the rustling thermal blanket. Someone had dressed her in an unlovely turquoise hospital smock and got out of bed, and she threw herself down shamelessly at the feet of the Necromancer Prime, the Resurrection, the God of the Nine Houses, the Emperor Undying. She pressed her forehead down onto the cold, clean tiles.
"Please undo what I've done, Lord," she said. "I will never ask anything of you ever again if you just give me back the life of Gideon Nerve."
"I can't," he said.
He had a bittersweet, scratchy voice, and it was infinitely gentle.
"I would very much like to, but that soul's inside you now. If I tried to pull it out, I'd take yours with it and destroy both in the process. What's done is done is done. Now you have to live with it."
She was empty. That was the terrible thing. There was nothing inside her but the sick and bubbling detestation of her house. Even the silence of her soul could not dilute the hatred that had fermented in her from the genesis of the Ninth House downward. Harrowhark picked herself up off the floor and looked her emperor dead in his dark and shining eyes.
"How dare you ask me to live with it?"
The emperor did not render her down to a pile of ash, as she partway wished he would. Instead, he rubbed at one temple, and he held her gaze, somber and even.
"Because," he said, "the Empire is dying." She said nothing. "If there had been any less need, you would be sitting back home in Dreaber, living a long and quiet life with nothing to worry or hurt you, and your cavalier would still be alive. But there are things out there that even death cannot keep down. I have been fighting them since the Resurrection. I can't fight them by myself."
Harrow said, "But you're God."
And God said,
"And I am not enough."
She retreated to sit on the edge of the bed, and she pulled the hem of her hospital smock down over her knees. He said,
"It wasn't meant to happen like this. I intended for the new lictors to become lictors after thinking and contemplating and genuinely understanding their sacrifice. An act of bravery, not an act of fear and desperation. Nobody was meant to lose their lives unwillingly at Canaan House, but Kithareya.
The Emperor closed his eyes.
Kithareya was my fault, he said. She was the very best of all of us, the most loyal, the most humane, the most resilient, the one with the most capacity for kindness. I made her live 10,000 years in pain because I was selfish and she let me. Don't despise her, Harrow. I see it in your eyes. What she did was unforgivable. I can't understand it. But who she was. She was wonderful.
You're awfully forgiving, said Harrow, considering she said she was out to kill you.
I wish she'd said that to me, said the Emperor heavily. If she and I had just fought this out, it would have been a hell of a lot better for everyone.
Harrow was silent.
He seemed lost in thought.
He said presently,
Most of my lictors have been destroyed by a war I thought best to fight slowly, through attrition. I have lost my hands, not just to death. The loneliness of deep space takes its toll on anyone, and the necrosants have all put up with it for longer than anybody should ever be asked to bear anything. That's why I wanted only those who had discovered the cost and were willing to pay it in the full knowledge of what it would entail.
All this washed over Harrow's shoulders. She realized immediately that she was a fool, that she was asking the wrong questions and listening to the wrong thing. Who else beside me is alive, Lord?
Ianthe Tridentarius, said the Emperor, minus one arm.
The 6th House Cavalier was only injured when I left her, said Harrow Hark. Where is she?
We haven't recovered any trace of her, or her body, said the Emperor, nor that of Captain Deuteros of Trentum, nor of the Crown Princess of Ida.
What?
All the houses will have questions tonight, he said. I can hardly blame them. I'm sorry, Harrow, we couldn't recover your cavalier either.
Her brain listed sharply. Gideon's gone.
Everyone else is accounted for, he said. We have had to settle for partial remains of the 7th House and the warden of the 6th. Only you two were confirmed alive. It doesn't help matters that I can't even go down there and search.
Harrow found herself saying distantly, Why can't you go back? It seemed to be the whole of Kithareya's plan.
The Emperor said, I saved the world once, but not for me.
Harrow pressed her legs down into the cool metal rib of the gurney. She expected to feel something, but she didn't. She felt nothing at all. There was a great and gnawing emptiness, which was mildly better than feeling something, at least. A tiny voice in the back of her head was saying, Someone will burn for this. But it was only ever her own. The Emperor leaned back in his chair, and they looked at each other. He had a ridiculously ordinary face. Long jaw, high forehead, hair a dull and leaden brown.
But those eyes. He said, I know you became a lictor under duress.
Some may call it duress, said Harrow.
You aren't the first, said the Emperor. But listen to me. I will do what I haven't done in 10,000 years and renew your house.
How did he know about that?
I'll safeguard the 9th. I will make sure what happened at Canaan House never happens again. But I want you to come with me. You can learn to be my hand. The Empire can gain another saint, and the Empire needs another saint more than ever. I have 3 teachers for you, and a whole universe for you to hold on to for just a little while longer." The King Undying had asked her to follow him. All she wanted was to be alone and weep. "Or you can go back home again," he said. "I have not assumed you'll agree with me. I will not force you or buy you. I will keep covenant with your house whether you come with me or stay at home."
Harrow said, "We can't go home again."
There was a vague reflection of her in the window, interrupted by distant space fields pocketed thick with stars. She turned away. If she saw herself in a mirror, she might fight herself. If she saw herself in a mirror, she might find a trace of Gideon Nav. Or worse, she might not find anything. She might find nothing at all.
So, the universe was ending.
Good. At least, if she failed here, she would no longer have to be beholden to anybody. Harrow touched her cheek, and was surprised to find her fingertips came away wet, and that the Necrolord Prime had chivalrously lowered his gaze. She said, "I will have to go back eventually."
"I know," said the Emperor.
"I need to find out what happened to my cavalier's body. I need to know what happened to the others."
"Of course."
"But for now," said Harrow, "I will be your lictor lord, if you will have me."
The Emperor said,
"Then rise, Harrowhark the First."
The End. This book was read for you by Maura Quirk, a member of SAG-AFTRA. We hope you have enjoyed this production of Gideon the Ninth by Tamsin Muir. Recorded books are available wherever audiobooks are sold, including Audible.com, Audiobooks.com, Google Play, Apple iTunes, and in public libraries through RB Digital. Thank you for being a Recorded Books reader.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.